Evening.
Two copies.
Evening. Where do we leave off? I remember our discussion. I'm not sure at what point in our discussion we ended last week, but I think we had essentially put forward a thesis or a suggestion regarding the meaning of the symbol of woman in philosophical works in Tanakh. When the Sifut HaChokhmah in Tanakh, essentially, certainly Mishlei, we've seen now Kohelet, I will suggest to you Iov as well, and to some extent Tehillim, although less so. When the Sifut HaChokhmah and the philosophical works of Tanakh refer to woman in general, as a symbol, it can be understood on the pshat level of whatever the context is, but it can also be understood as a metaphor to the concept of philosophy as a whole, wisdom in general. And from that point, Mishlei introduces us to a unique notion, namely that there are two types of wisdom, just as there are two types of archetypes of women that Mishlei discusses, the Isha Zona and the Isha Kshera, a good woman, an evil woman, a harlot, a woman, a Keret Habayit. Those two paradigms, in contrast to each other, represent to Shlomo, represent to philosophy of Tanakh, the notion that there are two types of wisdom. Mishlei introduces the notion of Reshit Chochma Yirat Hashem, that there's a notion of wisdom that has to be anchored in fear of God, that has to be anchored in reverence of God, that's not just an arbitrary or a disconnected wisdom. What that distinction is, I wanted to explore further tonight. What exactly is the fundamental distinction between these two paradigms of wisdom? Do they differ philosophically? Do they differ methodologically? Do they differ in substance? What is the key difference between these two types of wisdom, to which Kohelet debates them, the Chacham on the one side, and the Yirei Elokim who rejects that Chochmah on the other? And that essentially is where we left off last week and where we want to pick up this evening. And I have a source page for you as well for tonight. Tonight's class is going to deal... Well, we're certainly going to deal with text, because we're going to deal with the text of various chapters in Ketuvim. But I want to address the issue of wisdom and philosophy from a methodological point of view, at least as it is expressed in Tanakh. To do so, I need to draw a link between the three fundamental books of Jewish philosophy in Tanakh itself. There's really four. They are, if I include Kohelet, there are four.
Mishlei,
Iyov, Tehillim, and Kohelet. Tehillim is a little bit different for a number of reasons. Tehillim stands, generally when we speak about work about Tanakh philosophy, or Tanakh... we usually refer to the trio of Iyov, Mishlei, and Tehillim. Anybody know what they're known as? They're known by a special acronym. Sifrei Emet. Iyov, Mishlei, and Tehillim. They're known as a trio by and of themselves for a number of reasons. Number one, substantively, they deal with philosophy. They deal with the ideas and concepts. Tehillim somewhat differently than Iyov and Mishlei. Iyov and Mishlei explore a philosophical understanding of the world. Tehillim expresses faith in philosophical terms, historical terms, philosophical terms. Tehillim is stylistically very different than Iyov and Mishlei. Iyov and Mishlei have a single author, without getting into the debate of who that author is in the case of Iyov. Have a single author. Tehillim certainly does not have a single author. Iyov and Mishlei were written as books of philosophy. Tehillim is a collection of psalms, tefillot, a collection of the songs of the Beit HaMikdash and various compositions over the course of time. So even though Iyov and Mishlei Tehillim are usually put together, from a methodological point of view, Iyov and Mishlei differ substantially from Tehillim. Why they link together is Sfremet, besides the philosophy behind them? Oh, correct. Only Bakara would know that. Iyov, Mishlei, and Tehillim have a different trup system. They have a different trup structure than the rest of Tanakh. The trup that we are familiar with from Chumash, you'll find the same trup with the same names, the same notes, and the same grammatical, syntactical structure to the trup throughout Tanakh, with three exceptions. Iyov, Mishlei, and Tehillim. And if you look at them, you'll see that there are notes there that are different, their structure is different, it's a whole different form, and much study has been done about what that is, far beyond the scope of my understanding. So I leave that as a separate issue.
Iyov has more of a storyline, whereas Mishlei and Tehillim you could put together just based on the lack of it.
Correct. You could distinguish them in other ways too, without question, by era, etc. But in terms of where I wanted to get to, which is the subject matter, Iyov and Mishlei struggle with a philosophical a philosophical quest to understand the relationship between God and the world. Tehillim is a very different style. But similar to Iyov and Mishlei, we could add Kohelet. And you could certainly look at a relationship between Iyov, Mishlei, and Kohelet in terms of themes that interrelate the three. And the best example is the one we're discussing here. They both deal with the question of what is Chochmah. So they all deal with the question of what is Chochmah? What is wisdom? What is its methodology? How do we attain wisdom? Is there a notion of good wisdom and bad wisdom, or acceptable wisdom and unacceptable wisdom from a Torah perspective? So they both struggle with that issue, or they all struggle with that issue, each in a unique way, but as we'll see over the course of this evening, there is a common thread that links them all. And that's the thread that I think that Kohelet picks up here in a very in a cryptic way, in a short, brief way, but I think a very important one. So if we go back to this passage that we are studying, Kohelet, which is the end of Perek Zayin, starting with Pasuk Chaf Gimel, 23. Kol zo nisiti b'chokhma, amarti ech kama vehi rechoka mimeni. This was my attempt to understand in wisdom. I thought, or I said, I would become wise, but it has escaped me, or it has distanced itself from me. Hi rechoka mimeni. It is far from me. Of course, parenthetically, you are no doubt familiar with Midrash Chazal on this pasuk, very famous Midrash Chazal, namely that it's talking about Parah Aduma. Right, this is the pasuk to which Chazal apply the notion that Shlomo was talking about Parah Aduma, the quintessential chok, Zot Chukat Torah, the red heifer. To which Shlomo says, "Amarti echkama, I said I would understand every mitzvah in the Torah, but hiruchakamimeni, the understanding of this mitzvah has escaped me." How Chazal got Para Aduma into this pasuk? The answer is maybe. Right. Much simpler answer. Much simpler answer? They didn't. Pshat and Drash never have to meet. There does not have to be a point of meeting between Pshat and Drash. That's the power of Drash. That it is not, that doesn't have to be tied to the context of the text, whereas Pshat, by definition, has to find its way, has to weave its way through the context of the text. That's the from a methodological point of view, that's where Chazal have the principle of Ein Meshivin al Adrush. That sometimes
the word
just
Chok is in here.
Chokah is not the same as Chok.
That's
about at the level of Pshat and Drash, never the Twain shall meet, right? That's about the stretches you're going to get. Vehira Chokah Mimeni. All right, fair enough. But what you do have is the notion of whatever Chokhmah we're talking about is described as Rachok. That's a very important word for us, because it picks up that word in the next Pasuk. Pasuk of Dalet. Rachok Mashahaya. That which is Rachok Mashahaya v'amok amok miyim tse'enu. Translates it here as that which is far off and exceeding deep. Who can find it? I would have divided those into two phrases. That which was is very deep. Rachok Mashahaya. Amok, amok, and it's very deep. And who is going to find it? In other words, these two verses somehow reject this chokhmah that has just been articulated, the philosophy of the chacham, with the notion of this chokhmah being, on the one hand, rachok, or rechoka, v'hi rechoka mimeni, rachok mashehaya, and amok, amok, mimzen. So two descriptions of this kind of chokhmah, namely, that it is, or not necessarily this kind of chokhmah, but chokhmah in general, that it is hard to find because it is too deep and too far, rachok and amok. And therefore you can't just miyim tse'enu. You can't just walk up to it and find it. You can't just walk up to it and take it. The chokhmah, real chokhmah, true chokhmah, is rachok and amok, is too far and too deep to be attainable or reachable by our hands. What is he referring? And again, in order to understand these psukim, I think it's important that we see that these are common themes. These are not just themes that are introduced in Kohelet, but they're common themes throughout the works of philosophy that are contemporary to Tanakh. And we'll see them in Mishlei, we'll see them in Iyov. And I think that triangle is very important to understand this whole approach of the Chacham. So as far as Mishlei is concerned, actually, if you want, we'll do it in the Tanakh, but if you have that page that I gave you last week, and there are extras here with the Parker for Mishlei, you don't need the translations on them. These have most of the Parker for Mishlei that we're going to be, not all, but most. But if you turn to Mishlei and you turn to Perek Chet, in the page, I've actually put a line next to it. But if you look at it in the Tanakh, it's Perek Chet Pasuk Chaf Bet, chapter 8, verse 22. Hashem, remember, this is in the middle, those first nine chapters of Mishlei, just to remind ourselves, those first nine chapters of Mishlei is the wisdom of the world, whether it be good wisdom or Torah, whether it be Torah wisdom or false wisdom, but wisdom is addressing the fool. Wisdom is addressing those who don't have wisdom, almost in the first person, like a personification of wisdom. There's a dialogue going on. So here, wisdom is speaking, and in chapter 8, as I mentioned last time, is the wisdom of the good wisdom, the anchored wisdom, the wisdom of Yirat Hashem. Hashem kanani reshit darko. God created me at the beginning of his way. Kedem mif'alav me'az. The first of his works of old. Me'olam nisachti me'rosh mikadme eretz. Me'olam nisachti, I was set up. Me'olam. Me'olam means from eternity, right?
Forever.
Forever, from everlasting. Me'rosh mikadme eretz, from the beginning, before mikadme eretz, from kodem eretz, from before the earth was, there was I. Who's speaking? This woman. Right. Which woman? The woman who personifies the chokhmah that begins with Yirat Hashem. Be'ein tohomot cholalti. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. Be'ein mayanot nichabdei mayim. When there was no fountains, abounding with water. Be'terem harim hotba'u. Before the mountains were set in place. Lifnei gva'ot cholalti. Before the hills was I brought forth. Ad lo asa eretz v'chutzot v'rosh afot tevel. Even before he had yet made the earth or the fields or the highest parts of the dust of the world. Ba'achino shamayim sham ani. When he made the heavens, which is a nashon nafel alashon, a pun, an alliteration. When he made the shamayim, Sham ani, there I was. V'chuko chug al pnei tahom, when he drew a circle over the surface of the deep. V'yamtso shchakim mima'al ba'azoz inot tahom, when he established the clouds above, when the fountains of the deep became strong. V'sumo layam chuko mayim lo yavru piv v'chuko mosdei aretz, when he gave to the sea its decree that the water should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, then I was by him, ve'ye etzlo amon, ve'ye sha'ashuim yom yom. There I was like a nursling. I was daily his delight. Misacheket lefanav b'cholet, playing always before him. Misacheket b'tevel arzo, playing with the universe, with his earth. V'sha'ashu'ai et b'nei adam, and my delights with the sons of men. Sonification of wisdom speaking. Essentially, what is Chochmah saying? I preceded not only man, I preceded the world, I preceded creation, I preceded the hills and the valleys and the rivers and the mountains and the tahom, the depths, and the yam and the sea. Before any of that, there I was. Does anybody recognize that idea?
I don't know.
Not quite. Not quite. Very famous idea, but we don't necessarily know that it comes from Mishlei. It's a theory that I've heard from, I've been done many times, and one day I'll write my master's thesis on it, who knows. It's the whole methodology of Midrash Chazal. You will very often find Midrashei Chazal that are very much based on the pshat of a pasuk or a perek, but not in the place where Chazal place it. In other words, Chazal will sometimes darshin and all kinds of creative drashot, that which is very explicit in other places in Tanakh. The assumption is that they don't need to tell you what's explicit, they need to tell you what is implicit. This idea is articulated in the very famous Midrash Chazal, and it's quoted by Rashi. It actually has an expression in the Zohar as well. First, Rashi and Chumash. Correct. First, Rashi and Chumash. Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. Rashi struggles with the grammatical structure of the sentence. Bereshit what? In the beginning of what did God create the world? What does it mean? Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. Rashi offers a number of interpretations. One of them being it what in the beginning of God's creation. Bereshit bara Elokim. Another one being ba'avur reshit. God created the world for the sake of Reshit. What is Reshit? Rashi offers three possible interpretations. One is B'nai Israel, and the other, it's actually on the source page that I just gave you. First Rashi on the page. Ein ha-mikra zeh omer ele darsheni. This verse demands an explanation. According to the way Chazal understood it in the Midrash, Bishvil ha-Torah shenikret Reshit darko. For the sake of Torah that is called the beginning of his way. Hashem kanani reshit darko, says Rashi. He quotes this pasuk. Bishvil, for the God created the world for the sake of the Torah, which is called the beginning of His way. Actually, it goes one step further. God did not only did He create the world for the sake of the Torah, but in fact, what Mishlei is saying is that the wisdom, and here Torah means not just the letter of the law or the text of the five books of the Torah, but the concept of a corpus of knowledge, of understanding, of philosophical and theological understanding of the world that predates creation. Which there had to have been some kind of knowledge, some kind of wisdom, some kind of divine plan from which the world was then put into place. That chokhmah, that wisdom, belongs to God. That's reshit chokhmah yirat Hashem. That's the beginning of wisdom that is anchored in the wisdom of God or the fear of God. That's where it all starts from. That kind of wisdom that goes back to the source of wisdom, tachonei la'adam da'at, that kind of wisdom is so old that it is at the very foundation of creation. It is the reason for the creation of the world. Described as in the before the depths were created, before the mountains and the regions, otherwise known and called as rachok, and amok, far and deep, mim tzen, who is going to be able to get it? It is beyond the grasp of the human being. Because we weren't there. Which is, by the way, the exact same answer that God gave to Eov at the end of Sefer Eov. Where were you when I created the world? Eov, whose entire text is devoted to his personal attempt to try to understand the world, the conclusion of Eov is God comes to him out of the storm and tempest and says, where were you when I created the world? There is a wisdom that stems back to creation, that stems back to God, that is beyond the ability of the human being to articulate or to come to on his own. Similar concept found in Kabbalistic writings, which is based on the Zohar. Istakel ba'oraita ubara alma. You hear the expression? God who looked into the Torah and created the world. The Torah is a blueprint for the world, that the Torah in some way preeminates or predates the world. It is often taken on a very literal level. Right? God wrote the Torah and then he created the world out of the Torah. As if to say that the physical text of the Torah that we have predates the creation of the world. That I don't think is what Shlomo HaMelech meant. I don't think that's the pshat of the idea. I think it's a much more profound idea. That the fundamental wisdom of God, that is this chokhmah that stems from the Torah, that is a revealed chokhmah that comes to us through the Torah, that chokhmah is beyond the ability of the human being to comprehend on his own personal attempt to understand the world. That is rachok and amok. That's what God used to create the world. That's the wisdom that emanates from God. Its source is in God himself. Show you another example of where we have a very similar idea, not necessarily in Tanakh, but you'll see this idea weaves its way through various forms of Jewish sources. Zohar, Medrash, philosophy. Rav Kook speaks about it in one of his early paragraphs in Orot HaKodesh, and I've given you a quote from Rav Kook on the page as well. I do not profess to be a expert in Rav Kook or in his writings or even understand most of what he writes, but sometimes there's a passage that is a little easier than others, and perhaps we can just in general get a sense of what he's talking about. He says, Chochmat HaKodesh hi na'ala mikol chochma. wisdom that is kodesh, that is sanctified, that is holy, chokhmat hakodesh, the wisdom of that which is holy and pure, is elevated above ordinary wisdom. There's a distinction to be made between chokhmah and chokhmat hakodesh. In Mishlei terms, between the Isha Ksheira and the Isha Zona, in Kohela terms, between the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim, between Reshit Chochmah Yirat Hashem and Chochmah, which is based on personal experience without anchoring it in the revealed wisdom of the Torah. All of these distinctions essentially reflect a similar idea. Shehi mechochmah, shehi me'apechet et ratzon v'hatchuna hanafshit shalom deha. This kind of sanctified wisdom or revealed wisdom has the ability to transform the soul of the individual who studies it. To elevate the soul to reach the heights of the source of that wisdom. Which is not true for earthly wisdom. Wisdom of science, wisdom of the world, wisdom of literature, wisdom of whatever it is that we are attempting to study. They could be describing wonderful things, pure ideas, beautiful ideas, world, art, and literature, and science, and nonetheless, they do not have the active ability to transform, the transformative character that this kind of chokhmah has. להמשיך את המהות העצמית של ההוגה בהן אל ערכן, to transform the essence of the person to the essence, to their value. באמת אין ליחס כלל ליתר הכוחות והעצמיות של האדם חוץ מכוחו המדעי לבד. Those wisdoms have no substantive connection to the essence of a person. They are wisdom that we attain by exploration, by examination, by laboratory work, the knowledge. But they do not transform the soul of the individual. Chochmah that comes from God, which is Chochmah HaKodesh, when you study it, when you link yourself to it, then it has the ability to transform the soul and link you to the Ribbono Shel Olam in a profound way. It talks in the end about Mitziyut Chadasha, as if a new person is created. Again, I don't want to get too much into the philosophy of Kook, but you have that distinction here between wisdom that is attained through human intellectual ability, analysis, what we see and what we perceive, versus wisdom that is revealed wisdom that comes to us from the outside, that is anchored in Yirat Hashem. I want to take this idea one step further. I'll share with you the Yerushalmi that appears just beneath this quote from Rav Kook, in many ways is one of the most important passages in the Yerushalmi in the understanding of the role of Tanakh, or an understanding of the various philosophical positions in Tanakh. Those of you who we looked at when we did Sefer Yonah, we did a piece of this there as well, although we did the other piece of it. Sha'alu l'chokhma. Yerushalmi describes the following dialogue. It was asked of wisdom, Chote ma onsho. What should be the punishment of the sinner? One of the fundamental themes of Tanakh is what do we do if we... Here's the law, and what do we do if we veer from that law? So there's a fundamental philosophical question. Sha'alu l'chokhma. Chote ma onsho. What should be the punishment of the wicked? Amra lehem, chokhma answered, Chata'im tiradef ra'ah. Sins should chase evil, or be chased by evil. What does that mean? I'm not sure either. We'll see in a moment. But in some level, it means that the chet or the chata'im will cause evil to befall the chote. In some level, it means that the result of sin is some kind of calamity or evil. Shalula nivu'ah. They asked nivu'ah, prophecy. Chotei ma'unsho. What should be the punishment of the sinner? Amra lahem, ha'nefesh ha'chotat, hitamut. The sinner should die. You understand, of course, the verse quoted in the first passage is from Sefer Mishlei, which is a book of Chochmah, of philosophy. The book quoted in the second phrase is Yechezkel, which is a book of Nivu'ah. The third paragraph is Shalu LaKadosh Baruch Hu. They asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Nefesh HaChotat, or HaChotei Ma'unsho, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Amar lehem, Yaseh Tshuva V'yitkapelo. Let him do tshuva, and he will be forgiven. Sheneemar, Tov Yeshar Hashem Aken Yelechatim Baderech, Yireh Lechatim Derech Lasot Tshuva. It is God who demonstrates how to do tshuva. Inconsistency in this passage is in the fact that when they ask a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the pasuk quoted is from Tehillim. Where would I have expected the pasuk quoted from to be from? From the Torah. So if you look at the psikta, which is the same dialogue, but a different source of the same medrash, you'll see that the psikta has an additional level of this discussion. On this pasuk in Tehillim, Shalu lechochma hachotei ma'onsho, amra lehem v'chataim tiradef ra'ah. Shalu lenevuah hachotei ma'onsho, amra lehem hanefesh hachotat itamut. Shalu la'torah hachotei ma'onsho. First two passages are exactly the same. They asked Chochmah and they asked Nivu'ah. The third passage is they asked Torah, Chotei Ma'unsho, what is the death, what is the fate of the sinner? Amralem, Torah answered, Yavi Asham v'yitkapelo, let him bring a korban and atone, let him do tshuva. Which is essentially the same passage that we had in the Yerushalmi. Here it quotes it actually from a pasuk in the Torah and concludes with Shalu LaKadosh Baruch Hu Chotei Ma'unsho. And Kodesh Baruch Hu answered, let him do tshuva and be forgiven. What is the basic structure of this passage? Who is being asked this question? Chochmah, Nivu'ah, and Torah in the Psikta, or Kodesh Baruch Hu in both cases. I divide them by answer, not necessarily by structure of the Medrash. What essentially do we have here? We have Tanakh. Chochmah is another way of describing the books of, in distinction to the books of Nivu'ah, the books of Chochmah is essentially the books of Ketuvim. The books of Nivu'ah is self-explanatory. And so what the Medrash is essentially asking is, what is the fundamental theme in Tanakh? Tanakh struggles with this question. It's a powerful medrash because it's a global, sweeping medrash. What is the theme of Tanakh, if not the result of sin? But what the medrash is suggesting is that each work within Tanakh, the domain of Torah, the domain of Nivu'ah, and the domain of Chochmah, seem to offer different approaches to this question. The approach of Torah or the approach to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, depending on the version of the Psikta, the Yerushalmi, is the person Nefesh HaChatat, Yitamut, should, sorry, the Yavi Tshuva, Yaseh Tshuva V'Yitkapelo, let him do Tshuva. Kodesh Baruch Hu is Malei Rachamim, Kodesh Baruch Hu is compassionate. The Navi is an interesting one. We discussed this when we did Yonah. The answer of the Navi is Nefesh HaChatat Tamut. What does that mean? It means that the Navi, and that's a declaration Yechezkel. In other words, the Navi, to some extent, is seeking retribution. God should punish the sinner. Which is odd, because we usually think of the Navi as expressing the desire for tshuva, the attempt to do tshuva, the yearning for tshuva. What the Medrash is pointing out is that at a certain level, the Nevi'im struggled with the concept of tshuva. because they saw the flip side of tshuva. The flip side of tshuva is the people will do it again. And they'll do it again. Too much compassion, and there's no deterrent to the sin. And the Nevi'im struggled with that concept. And you find more than once the Nevi'im turning to God and asking God to employ din, justice, judgment, punishment. Yonah, in Sefer Yonah, the story of Nineveh, which is where we discussed it last time. Yirmiyahu, in a number of places. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, at least in the Medrash, has that vantage point at some point in his life. There is a certain point at which the Nevi'im, who struggled so much with a love of Torah and a desire for Torah to be embraced by the world, they had difficulty with the notion that God is so compassionate that he lets the sinners continue to sin. And ultimately the result is that more people sin. I'm interested in Mishle's answer. I'm interested in Ketuvim, Chochmah, philosophy. What is the answer of Sifut HaChochmah in Tanakh or Ketuvim in particular? And here, what does the Medrash say? Chataim Tiradef Ra'ah. Which again is a Pasuk in Mishnah. Chataim Tiradef Ra'ah. What does that mean? Sins will bring on calamity. In the vernacular phrase, you get what's coming to you, crime doesn't pay. What will be the result of the sinner? Not to worry. The sinner will get it in the end. Chata'in teradef ra'ah. The result of sin will be calamity or evil will befall such a person. That's a philosophical vantage point. I look at the world, and I look at what pays and what doesn't pay, and what is advisable, and the result, the intuitive result, is that it certainly doesn't pay to adopt a philosophy of evil, because it will self-destruct. Now, it's interesting that that is, in fact, a vantage point that is expressed many times in Mishle. I'll show you one example. This is not on that sheet that I gave you. So here you'll have to turn to Mishle Perek Vav. Mishle Perek Vav. Again, this is all part of that introductory section of Mishle where he's describing wisdom, good wisdom, bad woman, all part of the same theme over and over again. If you start with verse 20, you'll see what I mean. Netzor b'ni mitzvat avicha ve'al titosh tarati mecha. Again, that same phrase with which Mishle opens. Keep my father's commandments, for do not forsake the Torah of your mother. Koshrem al libecha tamid. Bind them to your heart continuously. Ondem al gargarotecha. Tie them around your neck. Bihita lechecha tanche otach b'shachbacha tishmor alecha v'akitzot tehitisichecha. When you walk, it should lead you. When you lie down, it shall keep you. When you awake, it shall talk with you. Phrase that sounds very much like, right? They say it in the Shema. Paraphrase of a similar idea. Kiner mitzvah v'tera or. For the commandment is a light, is a lamp, Torah is a light, v'derech chayim tochochot musar, and reproof of instruction of the way of life. All of this referring to the chochmah, the wisdom of Torah, of Yirat Hashem. And all to lishmorcha me'eshet ra. All to protect you from the evil woman. Going back to that theme, which is the central part of this section. Mechakat lashon nochuya. From the smoothness of the tongue of the foreign woman, al tachmod yofia b'levavecha, do not lust after her beauty. Ve'al tikachecha be'af apeha, do not let her take you with her eyelids. How do you take somebody with your eyelids? Right? By flirting. Ki ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem ve'eshet ish, for by means of a harlot a man is brought to a piece of bread. Nefesh yikara tatsud, and or the adulteress will hunt him for the precious life. Hayachte ish esh b'cheko, can a man take fire in his bosom? Ubegadav lo tisrafna, and his clothes not be burnt? If you grab hold of fire, if you embrace fire, the result is going to be you'll be burnt. Im yalech ish ala gechalim v'raglav lo tikavena, can a person walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? Kein haba el eshet re'eu lo yinake kol hanogea ba. So too a man who goes to his neighbor's wife, whoever touches her shall not go unpunished. Lo yavuzu laganav ki yignov. Do not men despise a thief, even if he steals lemalein nafsho ki yirav, even if he steals to satisfy his soul when he is hungry? V'nimtzai yishalem shivatayim, and if he is found, he shall have to pay sevenfold. At kol hon betoyiten, he'll have to give all the substance of his house. Noef isha chaserle, he who commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. Nafsho, mashchit nafsho hu yasena, he who does that destroys his soul. Nega v'kalon yimtza, wound and dishonor shall he get, v'cherpato lo timache, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. Ki kinat chamat gaver, for jealousy is a rage of man. V'lo yachmol b'yom nakam, he will not spare, he will not have compassion in the day of his vengeance. Lo yisapne lo kol kofer, he will not regard any ransom. V'lo yoveh ki tarbe shochad, and he will not rest content though you may offer him a bribe. In short, according to Mishlei, why is adultery to be discouraged? Why is it not a good thing to commit adultery? You'll say, "Why? What do you mean to commit adultery? It's in the Ten Commandments. It says right there, right? Lot enough." It's interesting. Mishlei doesn't say that. Mishlei says, "Don't commit adultery because you will be punished." Punished is a theological term. What will happen to you if you commit adultery?
You'll get hurt.
You'll get burnt. You'll destroy yourself. You'll destroy it, meaning yourself. You'll self-destruct. Why? Because we're not there yet. In the text, why? Ki kinat chamat gaver. Because jealousy is the rage of man. Why should you not commit adultery? Who? Because you will get caught. Why should you not? Is that not what it says? That's what it says. It says don't commit adultery because you will get caught. Don't steal. Why? Because when you get caught, you're going to have to pay back sevenfold and you'll end up being broke. So why bother? In other words, chataim tiradef ra'a.
But it's almost as if you don't get caught, it's okay.
Oh, we're going to get to that issue in a moment. That's the theological question that we're going to get to in a second. But that's what he says. Right? Let's first deal with the text. That's what it says. It says, if you commit adultery, you will not get away with it. The husband will not forgive. He will not bear the iniquity. God is nake. Man, lo yinake, won't bear the iniquity. Lo yavuzu laganav ki gnov. Unimtza yishalem shivatayim. Noef isha chasalev. Why? Because ki kinat chamat gaver. To commit adultery is foolishness. Because you're going to get caught. And rage, jealousy, is full of rage. That's one part of the picture. And the truth is that's, if you look at Mishlei and you look at Iyov, that's the methodology by which they analyze the world. Take a look at the world and ask the question, without bringing God into the equation yet, the struggle in human terms, in human intellectual terms, is there a reason why this course of action should be discouraged? Shema b'ni musar avicha v'al titosh tovat imecha. Give you good advice. The Mishnah is full of good advice, not necessarily religious advice. Good advice. Here's another example. Mishlei Shlomo. Ben Chacham Yisamach Av. Ben Ksil Tugat Imo. A wise son makes a father happy, and a foolish son is the grief of his mother. Forgetting the issue of the father and mother, that's poetry. That's back and forth, and that's parallelism in Tanakh. But Mishlei, philosophical statement of Mishlei, which is that a wise son brings his parents nachas, and a foolish son doesn't bring the parents nachas. Is that a theological statement? Is that a particularly religious statement? Or is that an insight into the workings of the world? There's a fundamental component of Mishlei. It says, I'm looking at the world, and I'm trying to understand it, and I'm trying to analyze it, and the result of conclusion is this chokhmah of the world, and what it tells me is, when I look at the world from that perspective, what it tells me is that my pen is dead. What it tells me is chataim given defra. It tells me the crime doesn't pay. And in Eov, you have a very similar line of thinking, a very similar analysis. What is the answer of Mishlei to that? The flip side of this is that Mishlei introduces to us the notion, which is a chiddush, it's a novelty, that to really understand the world, you have to take this idea one step further, one step deeper. Namely, you have to recognize that whatever chokhmah you come up with, however you understand the world, has to be anchored in reshit, the beginning, the foundation. And the foundation is Yirat Hashem. What does that mean? What does that mean? In Mishlei terms, what does it mean? In Mishlei terms, it means as follows. If you commit adultery, you will get caught. That's a philosophical statement that could be found in any book of philosophy anywhere. What's unique to Mishlei? What's unique to Mishlei is the thesis of why you will get caught. You will get caught by the husband. And then? Then all hell will break loose. But the foundation of Chochmat Hashem, Reshit Chochmat Yirat Hashem, is to recognize that who brought the husband home? Who orchestrated, circumvented, who created the circumstances that would initiate the fact that the husband would come back from his business trip a day early and walk in and find you there? Reshit Chochma, Yirat Hashem. The foundation of Chochma, its anchor, its underlining principle, can truly only be understood if you bring it back to the foundation of Yirat Hashem. That's the Chiddush of Mishlei. That ultimately we are only looking at one part of the picture. We see a very superficial part of the picture. The depth go all the way back to the moment of creation, Reshit Hashem Kanani, Reshit Darko. That depth, that the whole mechanism, how the world operates, and how it integrates both naturally and historically, that's unique to Mishlei. That's the notion that ultimately it all comes back to divine providence. It all comes back to God. You can't take anything for granted. And you have a similar thesis in Eov. I don't know if I'm going to bother going through Eov with you in the text, but I'll just give you a reference if you want to look at the third parallel in this process from Kohelet to Mishlei. The third process, take a look at Eov chapter 28. Read it on your own. You'll see the very end of that chapter is almost identical to the verses I showed you earlier in Mishlei. He talks about HaChochma me'ayin tavo, ve'eze mikom bina. What is the source of Chochma? What is the source of Bina? Vayomer la'adam hen yir'at Hashem hi Chochma v'sur me'ra bina. Ultimately, it's fear of God that is the source of wisdom, and abandoning evil, which is the true understanding of the world. That's, says Eov, is the answer to the quest of wisdom. And so you have a similar type of approach in Eov. And if I go back to the Mish, to the Medrash with which we began, that's essentially what the Medrash says, that Shalul Chochma, when they asked the books of Chochma as a whole, what is the approach to, that should befall the sinner? Chochma answered, Chataim tiradef ra'ah, the sinner should be punished. Meaning, a crime doesn't pay. Calamity will befall the sinner. That's not just a sense of that's the way the world operates. That's the Chochma's understanding of divine providence. That's its understanding of how God interrelates the world. The Navi works beyond the realm of natural course of history and natural course of nature. The Navi is in dialogue with God. So the Navi can invoke the notion of direct divine retribution. Nefesh achotati tamut. Punish. Because the Navi is in communication with God. In Ktuvim, Ktuvim were not written by Nevi'im. They were written by philosophers. That's why they're in Ktuvim and not in Nevi'im. So their dialogue is not with God. Their dialogue is with the world. Their dialogue is with an understanding of the world. They're trying to embrace the world. They're trying to comprehend the world. And then, says Tanakh, there comes a point where the human intellect stops, and we have to recognize that there's a wisdom that goes beyond our own comprehension, and that's the source. That's Reshit Chochma. That's its anchor. And that's where the Torah begins. Is this clear? I don't know if I've confused us or not, but I wanted to weave the ideas through, because they interconnect Kohelet, Eov, and Mishlei so profoundly that essentially to look at Kohelet, you have to look at it in the context of the broad Sifrut of Tanakh. Yes.
But if the Chacham or the Chochmah didn't relate to the Rachamim. They don't acknowledge that.
Correct. Neither does the Navi. In that Medrash, neither does the Navi.
But the Navi's in dialogue. At least he could say, ultimately, Hashem has the power.
Well, both the Navi and the Chacham in that Medrash. Remember, the Chacham there is different from the Chacham Kohelet. The Chochma there and the Nevuah there, or the books of Nach, are looking at what should be the goal. What should be the result? That's why I prefer the expression Nefesh Achotat Mat Tehei Onsho. What should be the goal? What's your dream? What would you like to aspire to? And they both aspire to a world in which the sinner is punished. That's the irony of it. They both aspire to a world of din, not a world of rachamim. Because from the point of view of the world, there's a lot of rachamim in the world. Unfortunately, it creates a sense of anarchy. That's a Kohelet thing we'll come back to in much, and we will address in the next parak. The notion of if you apply rachamim to people who from our perspective don't deserve it, what ends up happening is you end up with a world that looks like it's run by anarchy. Tzadik v'ra'lo, asher v'tovlo, you get the injustice that Kohelet will speak about in the next parak. That's exactly right. So it's an ideal, but that's where they're coming from. Okay. Let's go back to Kohelet and finish this this parak.
What does Mishlei do, though, in a situation where the sinner isn't punished?
Kohelet deals with it more than Mishlei. Mishlei is this pure world. This is where the world operates. The reality is the sinner always gets punished. You know, may see it perhaps, but he always gets punished. Sin, a life of sin is not really a life of meaning. It's a life void of meaning. Mishlei has this very idealistic picture of that's really the way it is.
What about the good man who...
So Mishlei doesn't deal with that question. Kohelet does. Mm-hmm. Right? Kohelet will deal with it much more. And that's one of the differences to Mishlei and Kohelet. To Mishlei, the answer to that is that there is... If you look deeper, if you understand the world, the sinner is really suffering in this, and the righteous person is really having a pure relationship with God. There's a certain idealistic, almost unrealistic sense that permeates you, and that permeates Mishlei. We get to Kohelet; he deals with that issue much more head on. The next chapter, between the eyes.
It's almost like opting out of reality when it doesn't happen the way I say it should. I don't understand it. God's taking care of it.
Right. Well, we'll see. That's the struggle in Kohelet. If you're looking for an answer to that question in this year, you're not going to get it.
There isn't an answer.
Right. I'm not. But the struggle with that question, he deals with in Kohelet. And the Neo, clearly. And that's the theme of all of Sefer Iyov. Less so in Mishlei. Okay, let's go back to Kohelet for a moment. I want to finish this parak, and at least in the text of it, and deal with a very, very strange ending. So let's go back and see where we put all these pieces into the text now, and we'll read it and see what comes up. Kol zon isiti b'chokhma, amarti achkama v'hiu echokam imeni. I'm on chapter 7, verse 23 of Kohelet. All of this I attempted in wisdom, this philosophy of the approach of the philosopher. Remember the methodologically. What does the Chacham do? The Chacham of Kohelet looks at the world and draws his conclusions. But they are his conclusions. To the Yirei Elokim, where's the fault in the Chacham? It's not in his conclusions. To the Yirei Elokim, the fault is in the methodology. Who are we to draw our conclusions on the world? Type of thing. I thought I could become wise, that I would embrace the world, I would understand the world. Many, but true wisdom is beyond me, far from me. It's far, it's deep. We, human beings, finite flesh and blood, can't reach that kind of depth. When I sought in my own heart, my own understanding, to attempt to address wisdom and understand the cheshbon and calculation, and understand the way of evil and folly, my only conclusion I came to is, I found woman of fate worse than death. Which woman? This disconnected philosophy of you're drawing your own conclusions rather than drawing the conclusions based on the revealed wisdom of Hashem. This wisdom, this philosophy, is like the harlot. She's a trap. Her hands are snares. Tov lifnei Elokim yimalet mimena. V'chotei yilachet ba. The good before God, one who embraces God, who embraces Yirat Hashem, should escape her grasp, the grasp of this woman who represents the disconnected Chochmah. Whereas, Re'eze matzati amra Kohelet, achat l'achat l'mtsoch cheshbon, this I found, says Kohelet, putting one thing on top of another, adding one plus one to get two, asher od bikshan nafshi v'lo matzati, adam echad me'elef matzati, v'isha b'cholel lo matzati, found one in a thousand, men I can find, women I can't find, that kind of wisdom is beyond my comprehension, you can search and search and search, you'll never find it. Levad, re'eze matzati amar Kohelet, re'eze matzati, this is what I found, asher asa ha'elokim et ha'adam yesha, v'heima bikshu cheshbonot. God made man straight. If man has become crooked, it is because man has sought his own deviations and crookedness. There's one problem in this text left that I haven't resolved, that we haven't addressed. One strange anomaly in this text. I've read it a few times, we've glossed over it. But I think it's very telling, very interesting. There's a grammatical problem in this text. Simple grammar. Correct. Amra Kohelet. Pasuk 27. Pasuk Hosein. Re'ei zem matzati Amra Kohelet. Achat le'achat l'mzat ishbon. Where did that come from?
Unless he's the good woman who accepts God and the true way of wisdom. So he has to say it as a female.
Interesting.
That's not what you had in mind.
No, it is what I had in mind, but we're going to have a journey to get there. But that's exactly what I had in mind. Right? Typo. Why do you say typo?
Well, Kohelet could be in a word that ends with a tough, could be considered female in someone. Typo, it's a mistake.
Typos in Tanakh are pretty dangerous stuff there.
I just threw that out.
I don't know. I never subscribed to typos in Kohelet, but I do recognize the fact that that there is a problem here. Amar Kohelet. Kohelet is in the masculine form throughout the entire text, except here. That's a little bit of a strange anomaly. Oh. Why would that solve my problem?
Typo,
so it's
space.
Typo, so it's, we'll see. I know you like this typo. I'm not sure I like this typo. But we'll see. Take a look in Perek Yud Bet for a moment.
In
Kohelet.
No.
Perek Yud Bet. Take a look at Pasuk Chet. Havel Havalim Amar HaKohelet. Right? Interesting. Havel Havalim Amar HaKohelet. So could it be that Amra Kohelet is really Amar HaKohelet and the hey got misplaced?
Misplaced is not a typo.
Right. Okay? Because nothing gets misplaced by accident.
Okay.
Nothing gets misplaced by accident. I'll show you a very interesting example. Take a look on the source page. I'll show you a really powerful example. There are actually a number of these examples in Tanakh. I think I've collected three or four of them, but there are more. But here's a, in my opinion, probably one of the best. Yirmiyahu Perachav Gimel Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'chi yishalcha ha'am hazeh o ha'navi o kohen lemor. If a navi, if this people will ask you, or the Navi, or the Kohen, and say, Ma Masa Hashem. I understand this. Let me just see. I think there's a context here which I need to give you. Let's read it from the pasuk. V'chi shalcha ha'am hazeh o ha'navi o kohen lemor. If the people will ask you, or the navi, or the kohen, saying, Ma masa Hashem. What is the masa Hashem? What's a masa?
Burden.
The burden. What is the burden of God? What is God burdened with? Yamarta lehem. This is what you will answer. Et ma masa. Tanatashti etchem ne'um Hashem. et ma masa. Somebody translate that phrase. Et ma masa. What is the masa of God? Et ma masa. What does that mean? It is, sounds gibberish, right? Somebody give me the grammatical structure, translate this phrase. Et ma masa. That's the answer. You will ask, what is the burden of God? Ma masa Hashem. And the answer? Et ma masa. What are we talking about? Look at Rashi. Amarti alehem et ma. Et ma masa v'natashti. V'natashti means azavdim, azavti. I will abandon. Amrim lachem ma masa. When they will say to you, what is the burden? You will answer, atem ma masa, l'kadosh baruch hu. You are the burden of God. Where did Rashi get that from? Take a look. Et ma masa. Atem Amasa. That's the answer. What is the burden of God? You are. Says the Navi. Now, why is it written et ma masa? Because it's a typo, right? Right?
Keep another line.
Right? Or, I don't like typos in Tanakh. Right? What's the alternative? It's intentional. If it's intentional, what's the purpose?
Maybe because it's an unpleasant idea and you don't
right.
want to say it out loud.
That's right. Lashon Saginor. To hide it. The Navi spoken code. The Yirmiyahu spoken code often. Yirmiyahu's message was so treasonous and so harsh that Yirmiyahu employs a number of different codes in his Nevuah to avoid the accusation of treason. One of the famous ones is his entire Nevuah against the nation of Sheshach. His entire Nevuah against the nation of Sheshach. Anybody know what the nation of Sheshach is? Bavel. In what language? Atbash. Yirmiyahu has an entire nevuah against Sheshach because it was so treasonous that to say Bavel, he would have been killed on the spot. And he was Yirmiyahu. There are codes throughout his text, so it's not surprising that he would say, "Atem ha-masah" was such a harsh idea that he broke it up. Etma masah. He may have even said it. He may have even said "Atem ha-masah." But it wasn't written that way. Because what we write and what we say is sometimes very different. Rashi says, "Atem lemasa, you are the burden." Rashi doesn't go through the text, but it's understood, that this is what Rashi means. At least that's what I pulled off. You'd have to look through various versions of Rashi, etc. But this is certainly how it's understood by in terms of understanding Rashi. Going back to Kohelet, we have a phrase, HaKohelet. It's quite possible that here would have been the first instance that the text would have said, Amar HaKohelet. But for very intentional reason, not necessarily a typo, right? The text was written as Amra Kohelet. Why? Now, Sidney, now let's go back to your answer. Because what essentially is going on in this passage? It's the conflict between the Yireh Elokim and the Chacham. The Chacham is depicted as the Isha, that's Mami Mavet, the woman who's worse than death, as the disconnected wisdom, disconnected from its roots, wandering the streets, the harlot woman, the Isha Zonah, all the terms of Mishle. Whereas the Yireh Elokim is Reshit Chochmah, she's the other woman. She's the woman who's anchored in the house. She's the Eshet Chayil. She's the Isha Kshira. She's the Akarat Abayit. She is Kohelet. Amra Kohelet. In this passage, which is the one parak in the entire Sefer where the Mishle metaphor is employed, it makes sense for Kohelet to take on that feminine role because she represents the alternative form of Chochmah. So when that debate, when Kohelet invokes that metaphor, it makes sense to talk about Amra Kohelet. Once we abandon that metaphor, as we do very quickly in the next parak, then we're back to Kohelet. This is a one momentary glimpse into the world of Mishle, and then very quickly we will find ourselves back in the world of Kohelet. Which brings us back to Perek Chet. Are there any questions on this? This is essentially the end of this unit. I want to start. I want to read some of the psukim for the next unit, and then we'll go. Yeah.
I don't know how you do that pasuk about I found one man in 1,000, but no women. I mean,
I don't know what the men they represent. I don't know what the men they represent. There's no metaphor in terms of men, but I think it's my guess is that it's part of this isha mami mavet, isha kshera. An isha of worthy woman, an eshet chayil, in this kind of world, I haven't found.
What does it mean that he found a man in 1,000?
I think that's just the contrast of the contrast of the metaphor. It's possible that there's something else there. I don't know. Which brings us to Perek Chet. Mi kachacham, umi yodea pesher davar. Who is like the wise man? Who knows the resolution of the matter? Chachmat adam ta'ir panav, va'oz panav yeshune. Wisdom, the wisdom of a man makes his face shine. Va'oz panav yishuneh. And the boldness of his face is changed, transformed, because he has wisdom. Ani pi melech shmor. I guard the king's words. Meaning, not I guard the king's words, but I, comma, now tzivui, command, instruction. Guard the king's words, al divat shvuat elokim, and the matter of the oath of God. Al tebehel mipanav telech. Do not be hasty to go out before his presence. Al ta'amod b'davara. Do not stand in an evil thing. Ki kol ashiyachpotz yaseh. For he does whatever pleases him. Vasher dvar melech shulton. The word of the king is authority. Umi yomar lo matase, who is going to tell him what to do? Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davara. He who keeps the commandments shall never know evil. Ve'etu mishpat yeda lev chacham. And the wise heart, the wise man's heart, will know time and judgment. Ki l'chol chefetz. Yesh eit umishpat, for there is time and judgment for every matter. Sound familiar? Kira at hadam rabba alav, for all of man's evil, which is much. Ki enenu yodeh ma sheyiye, for man does not know that which will be. Ki kasher yeh mi agid lo, for what who will tell him what shall be? Man has no power over the spirit to contain the spirit. There is no power over the day of death. There is no message of peace in a time of war. Wickedness shall not lo yimalet resha et ba'alav. How to translate? Nor shall wickedness deliver those who are given up to it. I'm not quite sure what that means. Et kol zera iti. All of this I saw. V'natonet libi. And I made it my understanding. L'chol ma'aseh she'nasah tachat ha'shamash. Everything done under the sun. Eita she'sharat ha'adam ba'adam l'ralo. As man has had authority over man, rules over man to his own hurt or evil. Uvachain ra'iti rishaim kfurim vaval. I have seen the wicked buried and coming. Umimkom kadosh yahalechu. And those that come from a holy place. Vishtakhu ba'ir asher kenasu, forgotten in the city is everything they have done. Gam ze havel, this is vanity. It is precisely because sentence or punishment against the evil is not executed speedily. That's why the heart of man is full to do evil. Because evil is not punished. That's the deterrent factor.
Fast enough.
As soon as you shall do evil 100 times, yet his days are prolonged. Ki gam yodea ani asher yetov liyarei Elokim. I know that it shall be good for those who fear God. Asher yiru milefanav, good for those who fear him. V'tov lo yiyah l'rasha, and good will not befall the evil one. V'lo yarich yamim katzer l'asher ani yarei, asher enen yarei milefnei Elokim. And the one who does not fear God will not have prolonged life. Okay, I could go on, but I think I've read enough to get a sense that we have a problem here. Which is? Time? You mean we ran out of time? Oh, we've all run out of time. 9:30 is the end of the class. Right. What is the problem in this parak? Amongst many, the theological problems we'll get to. From a textual point of view, who's speaking? And what do you think? What do you say? What are the options? Nah. Who's speaking? The Chacham? Sounds like there's lots of discussion about Chacham. Mika Chacham, mi yodeh, pesha davar. Who is like the wise man? Certainly sounds like the Chacham. It also sounds like the Yirei Elokim. Shmor, Pi Melech Shmor, Divrei Shvuat Elokim, guard the word of the king, guard the oath of the king, don't leave God's presence so fast, there will be justice, Et L'chol Chefetz, V'yesh Lek L'mishpat. Right, there's first person and there's third person, there's both. That's part of the problem. The person's speech in this, the form of speech in this chapter is very broken up. It's part of the problem. Right? Mika Chacham is third person. Ani is first person. Ooh. Ooh. That's a revolutionary idea. That's very creative. Maybe there is more than one speaker. At the same time?
Back and forth, perhaps.
Back and forth, perhaps. Good. So that idea we will have to explore in more detail next week.